This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're going to talk about sex. We're going to talk about sex from the standpoint of integrative sexual health. That's the title of a book for which I recently wrote a chapter. It is part of the Weill Integrative Medicine Library. With me is one of my co-authors. She's Madeline Castellanos. She's an MD. She's a psychiatrist who specializes in integrative sexual health. That's the nature of her practice. She's a holistic nutritional psychiatrist. She uses a functional medicine approach to health and wellness. And she's got 15 years of specialty in sex therapy with couples and individuals treating all forms of sexual dysfunction. She is unique in that she uses a functional medicine approach. So we're going to find out about it, and we're going to find out a little bit about the ins and outs, especially of female sexual dysfunction. Men have an advantage because, well, you know, there's all kind of medications out there, and men, while they have a lot of sexual problems, there's a little bit more of a hydraulic component to getting men to perform sexually. And so we're going to focus on female physiology and what's going on with all the problems that women are experiencing in regards to sexual satisfaction. So it's with great pleasure to have you on the program, Madeline. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, Ron. Thank you so much for being here. You know, your podcast provides just amazing information for people, and I'm very glad to be here for the second time now.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, this is a repeat visit for you because you've graced our airwaves in the past with a discussion of issues related to this. But so, first of all, what is an integrative sex therapist, and how might your approach differ from other sex therapists who work along these lines?
Sure. So, because I am an MD, I have the advantage of being able to combine the psychological treatment, which is classic sex therapy, from Masters and Johnson's, I guess, if you will, and also the biological aspect of that, which could be hormone replacement, checking hormone levels, also metabolism, because there's so many different things that can affect sexual functioning physically, and being able to address both of those with the patient. So the majority of sex therapists are psychologists or licensed clinical social workers, marriage and family therapists, so they can do the psychological aspect, and certainly they might have some idea that there might be a physical problem, but they themselves can't really address that physical problem. So it's nice to be able to do both together and explain that to the patient and integrate those.
Indeed. And well, you have the prescription pad, and also you have the ability to do a variety of tests that other types of sex therapists can't do. But you also bring a holistic, nutritional, integrative perspective to this problem. So does that actually make a difference? Is that a missing ingredient in achieving sexual satisfaction for some people?
Well, I think it makes a big difference because, you know, when we look at functional medicine, if we look at symptoms that arise in a person from a functional medicine perspective or model, which is a systems biology approach, we see that inflammation is a huge driver. That's sort of step one in the cascade, which then ends up being symptoms for somebody. And when we use a systems approach and we think of functional medicine, which is a much more I don't know, biological, I don't want to say biological based because then it gets confused with biologic medications, which is quite different. But when we look at what's driving inflammation and look at root cause and solve it that way, we are not only resolving the symptoms that that person's having, but also improving their overall general health, decreasing their risk for other issues. And sexuality, desire for, to have sex, sexual pleasure, etc., really is this intersection between how you're feeling emotionally and how you're feeling physically. Because emotionally, if you're not in a good place, you're not going to have as much pleasure. And physically, if you're not in a good place, you're also going to have a decrease in pleasure. So where those two intersect, that's the opportunity to have the best outcome for somebody.
Right. It seems to be a hallmark of balanced health in some ways, although it's not as integral to health as adequate hydration, food, sleep, exercise. But it's somewhere in the hierarchy of optimal portfolio of lifestyle practices that seem to further health and longevity and well-being.
Absolutely. I think, absolutely correct. It's not on the hierarchy, you know, it's not at the same level as, you know, hydration, which right. You could go without having sexual activity and still be alive, but it definitely, definitely improves your overall health. So we know that people that have regular satisfying sexual activity have better blood pressure. We know they have better overall circulation, and so therefore they have better blood flow to their brain. So it helps protect their mood. It helps protect their cognitive functioning. I think there was a study that even said it improves eyesight because of blood flow. It helps stabilize hormones. It's really a whole body experience. And the hormones that are released when you are having sexual activity, they contribute to health all over your body, just as growth hormone released from your brain in response to an injury may be used by any cell of the body for repair.
So it really can be considered part of an overall healthy lifestyle. So can you give us some figures, and let's focus particularly on female issues, because you wrote a really wonderful chapter. It's actually the very first chapter in this comprehensive text, Integrative Sexual Health. And it really, I think it's a great keynote for the whole, all the subsequent chapters. It's a deep dive into female sexual biochemistry, and it's very, very complex. You did a very scholarly take on, the balance of the hormones and all the factors that are involved in female sexual response. It's a deep dive for astute intelligent medicine listeners, or especially some of the clinicians in our audience. It's a great introduction, so congratulations. But can you give you some statistics on how prevalent problems are, especially from the female side?
Well, I would say, I don't have the hard numbers in front of me, but I would say for women, so when you're talking about sexual dysfunction, there's a lot of different types of sexual dysfunction. So women can have pain with intercourse, and that could be due to infections or due to something that's called vulvodynia, which more and more we're starting to understand it could be an autoimmune process.
So that could be in younger women. That's not necessarily associated with menopause or lack of estrogen.
Correct. Although lack of estrogen can contribute to vulvodynia, and some women using birth control pills, because of its effect on testosterone and to some extent estrogen, can develop vulvodynia. I think the major problem, though, and one of the most prevalent and most difficult ones to treat, is low sexual desire. Mm-hmm. And I would say,
which actually is a disorder. It's actually defined as a medical disorder, hyposexuality or low desire.
Right. So yeah. Hypoactive yeah. sexual desire disorder is now an official diagnosis in the DSM. So we can get insurance billing and medications to go with it. but we've recognized this a problem for a very long time. And certainly after Masters and Johnson, Helen Kaplan, she was the one that included sexual desire in the sexual response cycle, because she said, well, you can have arousal and you can have plateau and orgasm and resolution, but if you don't have desire, you're never getting to any of those stages. Mm-hmm. So, and that was decades ago. So we understand that sexual desire is a problem. And for women, and for men too, I'm sure it's multifactorial. hormones are just one aspect of them, of problems with desire, but they can be a very significant part of what contributes to low sexual desire.
And, you know, so there's the holy grail in pharmaceutical research is to come up with a comparable ED medication, you know, the medications that work for men that work comparably for women. But you can give women boatloads of Viagra, Levitra, Cialis, and it usually doesn't work, does it?
Well, you know, I love this question. It's so interesting that you said that. So the PDE5 inhibitors like Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, they actually do work in women. They do the same thing in women as they do in men, which is they prevent the breakdown of nitric oxide, so there's more, you know, vasodilation and engorgement of the erectile tissue, which then in a man causes an erection. The issue is that most of a woman's erectile tissue is internal. So she's got almost as much erectile tissue as a man does, and it's the entire complex of the clitoris, the bulbs that surround the vaginal opening, the urethral sponge, the perineal sponge. All of that erectile tissue, however, is internal. And because a woman has that tissue internally, she has a lot less sensation that it's actually engorged until it has been for a while, and perhaps she gets lubricated after, you know, minutes of this happening.
So there are less obvious manifestations, shall we say, delicately, in terms of successful achievement of sexual arousal.
Right. So the interesting thing is that because a man's erectile tissue is on the outside of his body in the form of his penis, correct, he has a lifetime of biofeedback.
Okay.
You know, of actually learning of, hey, this is happening in my genitals right now, and it's paired with I'm watching this activity, or I'm listening to this conversation, or I'm looking at this picture. And so he has a lifetime of training of matching those two together. And for men, there is definitely a very strong concordance between psychological arousal and physiological arousal. In women, however, they don't have this feedback mechanism. And so there is this discordance with when they're psychologically aroused and physiologically aroused. And what that means is they can be physiologically aroused, but not necessarily psychologically be aware that they are aroused. And so it's tricky because the Viagra will cause that vasocongestion in the erectile tissues. After many minutes, it will cause some increase in lubrication, but they may not necessarily in their brain pair that up with being aroused for sexual activity. They need something else that's psychological to go along with that.
Well, yeah, it's been said frequently, and it's become sort of a meme, that a woman's most important sex organ is her brain.
Right.
To some extent, is that true? Is that psychological factors may play a greater role in women than in men in achieving arousal and sexual satisfaction?
I think for women, you know, having psychological arousal is absolutely key. And yeah, I think if you want to learn how to stimulate a woman, you need to learn how to stimulate her between her ears.
Okay.
that's really what it comes down to, because think about it. We can have orgasms in our sleep, right? We don't have to have actual touch to have orgasms. It's if your psychological arousal is that high, then you can trigger an orgasm. Of course, while you're awake, it helps to have, you know, proper physical stimulation, but the eroticism, what a woman's thinking about, is going to create a huge benefit for her. And the trick is that estrogen, testosterone, you know, they also are going to regulate how much serotonin and dopamine are released. And so it's this constant feedback where they can enhance each other. So if you have good estrogen levels, if you have good testosterone levels, it's easier for you to get psychologically aroused. But you still need that stimulus of the psychological arousal.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance line of professional-grade supplements. One of the most important indicators of good health is your body composition, the proportion of fat and fat-free mass in your body. Having a healthy body composition promotes healthy blood pressure, heart health, and a healthy glucose metabolism. Our friends at Protocol for Life Balance have a trio of products designed to deliver effective body comp support with a variety of vital natural compounds that support appetite management, energy, healthy adrenal response, and more. Go to drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance for more information. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dr. Madeline Castellanos. Well, recently there was a big splash because they introduced a new so-called female Viagra. It's called Aggi, I think is the name, or Filbanserin is the name.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a flop. It just didn't really seem to take off. I mean, you hear a lot about Viagra, but you don't hear much about Aggi. Why is that?
So, you know, Aggi had a lot of problems. One of the problems was that the FDA put some very strict requirements on there. And I think practitioners, number one, were afraid to have that conversation with women because it had this warning about alcohol. So basically they had to get a woman to sign a release saying that she understood that while she was taking Aggi, she would not drink any alcohol. And that if she drank alcohol, she could, you know, faint, pass out, you know, have a syncopal episode. And that
puts a little bit of a damper on dating,
oh, yeah.
I think.
Right? I think some people,
it's nothing like,
making
a romantic evening end in a syncopal episode. I don't think that's going to be too romantic.
No, and then that's already in their mind of like, well, I can't drink wine. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but just the whole process of having to go through that consent and signing the release. Then there was also questions about when it was purchased by a pharmaceutical company, and then it was very expensive, and it was hard to get insurance companies to pay for it. So there was some obstacles in discussing it as treatment, and there were some obstacles to actually getting it in the pharmacies. So, but for, you know, women that have actually taken it will say that they actually have more desire and that it works for them.
Okay, so a qualified success, but often we talk about hormone therapy as a way of alleviating sexual dysfunction, but it doesn't quite work in such a linear fashion. It's thought that at least part of women's sexual response is due to the small amounts of testosterone that they have. And testosterone has been proposed as something that could enhance women's libido and sexual response, but it's not that clearly beneficial, is it?
It's interesting. Testosterone, I think, is wonderful. And if a woman is deficient in testosterone, I think it would be very, very wise to look into actually seeing if testosterone replacement is good for her.
Like as a topical, like usually as a topical cream that's applied to the skin or sometimes applied locally, vaginally.
So I prefer the topical preparations because, number one, you can control the dose much more easily. And number two, it more approximates physiological dosing. Mm-hmm. Whereas injections would be like once a week. You get a little bit of super physiological, level of testosterone, then tapers off. And then pellets, which, you get really super physiological dosing and then it tapers off. And I've seen some people get pellets and then have male level testosterone And I'm like, no, that's not. That's not desirable.
We don't want those side effects, you know, no. Hair thinning and facial hair and so on.
Right, right. So testosterone and estrogen help work together to increase dopamine release in the brain when there's stimulus, serotonin release in the brain when there's particular stimulus. And so those are very helpful. And of course, if you are deficient in estrogen and or testosterone, and you have physiological symptoms such as vaginal dryness, thinning of the labia, decreased sensation in the clitoris, spotting, perhaps bleeding, friable tissues of the vaginal mucosa, and those things cause pain or discomfort.
Right. And if it hurts, you're just not going to enjoy yourself. If
right.
It's associated, I mean, right. You know, sex that's associated pain. I mean,
right.
That may
you're
be
training
for,
yourself
for a certain segment of the population, and that's not, you know, whips and chains
right.
are not standard
so,
accoutrements.
So what happens is once women get the hormone replacement, they then have to get resolution in those tissues and then go back to experiencing it differently. And then their brain has to learn, oh, this doesn't hurt.
Right. You almost have to decondition yourself from the aversive
yeah.
associations with
That's
sex.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's just becomes almost like a conditioned response, like this is going to hurt, my muscles are going to go into spasm, mm-hmm. I'm not going to relax, and so on. Yeah, that can
right.
be a problem. So what are some of the other robbers of women's sexuality these days? I mean, a lot of women, unfortunately, statistics reflect that fully one quarter of women are taking antidepressants, I think, according to the last statistics. Also, oral contraceptives frequently used. What can they do?
So the oral contraceptives can decrease testosterone levels to the point where the nerve endings there around the vaginal opening or the clitoris aren't getting enough support because they are testosterone dependent. And then those nerves can actually end up causing pain to the touch, which obviously would be a deterrent for sexual activity, but even just caressing, it could be that painful. And so oral contraceptives can also affect mood. They're chemical castration, so they sort of flatten out your cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And there are studies that show that when a woman's ovulating and her testosterone levels and estrogen levels peak, she actually has a lot more sexual desire. And that is flattened out when she's on hormone contraceptive.
It just strikes me that if men were offered that option, it's like, here's this male contraceptive pill. It's just going to really reduce your risk of impregnating a female, but also you will have mood problems. You will have a lowered sex drive. I don't think you'd get a single man in the United States to take that kind of medication. So it's really kind of a double standard. It's like women are responsible for, family planning aspect of things, and yet they take upon themselves such a big burden of potential side effects.
I don't know if women actually know the burden of the
potential. I guess it's an awareness thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I myself took birth control for at least a decade, and I'd never had anybody tell me that there would be mood issues. I never had anybody tell me that it would affect my libido. I never had anybody tell me it would give me increased risk for cancer. There's also studies that show that women on birth control pills have a higher risk of suicide, higher risk of depression. Nobody ever discussed
blood
any
blood clots, you name it. Yeah.
The blood clots was described to me. That I knew about, but that was the only thing. And I knew I wasn't increased risk for clotting. I knew I wasn't a smoker. And so I figured, oh, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Right. And this was, I think, minimized. And in fact, I think they even made a case for the fact that, because you'll be free of worries about getting pregnant, you'll enjoy sex even more. Not so much.
We can't make general blanket statements because it's different for everybody. And I have seen women that when they get into menopause, their libido really takes off for that exact reason that you just said, which is now they're free of this idea, I can't get pregnant anymore, therefore I'm just going to do it whenever I can. And for some women that get birth control, it does help free them up, particularly if they're anxious about becoming pregnant and how that could impact their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at it case by case basis. The other factor you have to consider that I'm not sure we have good science for right now is that how you're affected by these things also depends on the efficiency of your testosterone receptors, the efficiency of your estrogen receptors, the efficiency of your dopamine receptors, the efficiency of your serotonin receptors. We're just starting to learn.
Which varies genetically and by individual, exactly. Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And then I guess among the worst are the injectable ones, or like things like Depo Provera, which right. has a lot of bad side effects. Progesterone in that form is really a libido killer. And it's considered, you know, I guess sort of the poor woman's version of contraception. It's, you don't have to take the pill, you get a shot and boom, you know, you don't get pregnant, but very devastating effects on mood and sexual response, right?
Well, that's so Depo Provera is medroxyprogesterone, and it is a progestin that has actually been shown to cause cancer. And that's alarming because, as you said, a lot of women are offered this as a low-cost, easy, I-don't-have-to-think-about-it type of birth control. And I think it's quite harmful. I think it really increases your risk for blood clots. It has the opposite effect that natural progesterone has on your arteries, which is vasoconstriction instead of vasodilation. We want vasodilation, not vasoconstriction. And so, and again, as you said, once it's injected, it's going to last for months and months and months.
Plus, it makes you gain a lot of weight. That's the other thing. All right. We want to tackle also the issues related to antidepressants. I mean, depression itself, it puts a damper on sexual response. And then top it off with antidepressants, which have their own unique effects. We'll explore that with today's guest, Madeline Castellanos. She's an integrative sex therapist, holistic nutritional psychiatrist. And do you want to give some information about your practice? You practice in both Florida and New York. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So I've had an office of private practice in New York for quite some time. I've been a psychiatrist for 22 years now. And I have been.
That's impossible because you must have been. You must have been Doogie Howser, like Doogie Howser, MD. Because
thank you.
Yeah, it couldn't be. I mean, to look at you, it's hard to believe. But all right.
Thank you. Well,
you're a veteran.
You know what? Good skin and good hydration and avoiding nasty vegetable oil. And taking my estrogen because I actually had a surgical menopause 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So when I got into functional medicine about a decade ago, it was because I had this surgical menopause and my OBGYN really, really did not want to give me hormone replacement and didn't even really want to have the discussion with me and just assumed and told me that I would be fine because I was young and my adrenal glands would pick up the slack. And I was like, okay, as I watched my muscles melt away, you know, I was like, look, I weigh 100 pounds. I can't afford to have my muscles melt away, much less my relationship, you know, go to pots because I now have also pain and all that goes along with that. So I started investigating and now I do functional medicine and I have both. I see patients who want to just do functional medicine. I see patients who want to just do sex therapy. And I have some patients that are doing both because it's all blended together. I have an office in Manhattan and an office in Boca Raton, and I go back and forth every other week.
Okay, is there a website?
Yes. So I have for my original sex therapy practice, it's thesexmd.com. And for my functional medicine practice, it's thebodymindmd.com.
Okay, great. Madeline, stay with us because we got lots more to discuss. And so in part two, we'll take up issues related to depression, the effects of antidepressants, also lifestyle factors, things like thyroid issues. Who knew that those actually have an impact on sexual performance, as well as dietary issues? And are there supplements that can enhance sexual performance, particularly for women? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.